Hello and welcome into episode 76 of the Stomp the Bus Show. I'm your host, Mark Harris, coming at you with my partner, Colton Dodgson, although you can't see him if you're watching YouTube because he's having some camera issues, but he's here all the time.
I'm here too, man. I lost 80 pounds since the last time you saw me, so I guess we'll never know.
Yeah. Well, they say the camera adds 10 pounds, so how does that that's going to work out with the 80 pounds? This is why we're journalism majors and not math majors. What?
I still look great, Mark. I still look great.
There you go. Well, something that's not great is ASU basketball.
There you go.
Yeah. The last time I went on, I think it was Jamiah Neal had entered the portal and Braylon Green had entered the portal. Jamiah Neal, it was pretty obvious. Like, it felt very likely that he was going to enter the portal this season, especially after he had entered the portal last year. So with him, that's not a big deal. Braylon Green, not great because he's young and you expect to grow, you know, or you would hope that he can grow with the program, not happening. Then the day after, Akil Watson enters the portal. So your two freshmen from last year both entered the portal. But, you know, you get Adam Miller back. He indicates that he's coming back, so that's good. And most people expected Frankie Collins to come back. Well, yesterday, Frankie Collins announces that he is entering the transfer portal. And this is really bad. You know, it's really bad, and it's just bad for the whole program. It's bad for Bobby Hurley. It's just bad. And I don't even really blame Frankie Collins in it. So what are your thoughts on...
I feel like with the Frankie Collins instance, it seems like it's something where he's kind of gauging his NIL value.
Absolutely, yeah.
In the responses that I saw to this announcement, it really seemed more like contract talks. Like in professional leagues, when you're looking at like what somebody's making relative to other players at their position and are they underpaid and all of these things. And that was pretty, that was a pretty wild, I guess, adjustment for looking at numbers like that for a college athlete. And that's just the era that we're in with this NIL stuff. So I do think the Frankie Collins thing, the door might not be closed yet, depending on what he's offered NIL wise relative to, I don't know, does that outweigh what he has with the program, what he has with Hurley, whatever. He just had a great defensive season, seems to be the leader of this team. So who knows? I think there's more to weigh here, more to gauge. I don't necessarily think the door is closed there, but again, if he's offered a ton of money, wouldn't be surprised if he left either. In terms of young guys transferring out, it just doesn't surprise me. One, the state of this program, but two, the state of college basketball, right? I mean,
yeah,
I think you tweeted out from our Stomp the Bus account, talking about the guys leaving Colorado, right?
Yeah,
and Colorado just had a very successful season, won a tournament game, and
I think it's like their best season ever,
like, right? So, I don't even necessarily think team success changes a player's perspective in this era, you know?
No, well, I mean, just look at last year. ASU, you know, had a bunch of guys leave, and that was – last year's ASU team was one of the better ASU teams that we've seen and since we began being at ASU, right? Probably like the second or third best, you know, low bar.
Absolutely, yeah. But – I mean, there's so many different factors that go into these decisions, factors we're probably not even aware of. But I think the days of assuming, hey, we had a successful year, your team's probably going to be intact, whatever, I think those days are long gone.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also, I mean, it's not so doom and gloom. Bobby doesn't typically, at least historically, it hasn't seemed like high heralded recruits have translated to overwhelming success on the court. But there has been, or there is a very solid recruiting class coming in next season, which I don't know, maybe that cushions the blow a little bit, but it is tough to lose some of those veteran guys. This was a veteran team, but you said it, Adam Miller's coming back. That's, that's good. And maybe we'll see Frankie Collins decide he wants to come back too. Who knows? But you're right. Another exodus from the program. It seems like this is it's happening year after year. It's just kind of par for the course with the basketball program right now. There really hasn't been much to talk about that has inspired optimism. Especially when you're watching all of these other Pac-12 teams make runs in the tournament. I feel like the Pac-12 has had a real solid tournament. So it's a bummer to see all that happen and see ASU down as bad as they are right now, especially when you consider where they're going to be next year
in
this super conference in the Big 12. So,
yeah, the Big 12 move, you know, it's a necessary thing that ASU had to do, but from a men's basketball perspective, it's just like, man, like it's daunting. And there's just no wiggle room either. So yeah, Frankie did say in his graphic at the end, quote, with ASU being an option to return in the statement. And I think that is somewhat notable just because usually when these players put out transfer statements, there's no like, oh, I might come back. It's usually 95% of the time it means they're gone. And yeah, like he's clearly testing the market, but that's bad. Like that's not going to be good for ASU. Like, no. I just don't think that, like, you know, and it's just like it's great that there's like a chance, but Colton, it feels like when you're like, you know, when you were single, not anymore, but like when you're texting a girl and they're like, and you're trying to like make plans, or, you know, texting a guy and you're trying to make plans, whatever. And they're giving you like, oh, I'm busy, or, oh, like yada, yada, you know, it's like, it's not officially dead yet, but it feels dead. Like Frankie Collins isn't coming back to ASU. Like,
yeah, it definitely doesn't feel that way. I don't know if I'd be shocked. I guess my thing is, it kind of feels like 70-30 or 75-45 based on that statement, which still isn't good.
That's more optimistic than I am, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, do percentages matter when he chooses to leave? Like,
right.
I guess that's just my level of optimism, only because of the money, right? Like, if he's looking at the money, he did make, I think it said $200K at ASU.
That's what Chris Cartman reported, Sun Devil source.
Right. So if you're looking at some of the other figures, and I mean, based on some of the other figures, I want to say the top 10 guards were paid. Well, I can't remember the numbers off of the top of my head, but I saw that the top 10 guards were paid a little bit more than Frankie Collins was last year. So if that disparity in money is a deciding factor, then yeah, he's definitely not coming back to ASU, considering, I mean, the NIL situation has gotten better, but we're still behind other schools. So
uphill battle still, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if that's the determining factor, he's probably not back. If he gets a little bit of a boost from ASU and decides, like, hey, I just had a really solid individual season, maybe we can build on that and turn that into some team success with Bobby, then maybe that plays a role too. Who knows? It all comes down to what he values. And ultimately, after sticking it out and having the season that he had in the face of what this team dealt with, whatever he wants to do personally, I more power to him. He's earned that.
Totally.
How inept everything going on around athletics at ASU is right now. So,
right. No, yeah, and I think we're both on the same page of like no one's blaming the players in this. Like, it's, I mean, you see the athletic directors around the country move like crazy. You see coaches move like crazy. Like, it's just how it is, you know. But that doesn't mean it's still like, I can still be mad at just like the situation, you know, right? Or upset about, or, you know, concerned, whatever word you want to use. And, you know, I don't think ASU probably won't have to get to, like, won't have to match exactly whatever his highest offer is, but it needs to be in the ballpark, you know?
Yeah.
And even then, who knows, right? Like, The other thing that's kind of floating around my head is like, okay, well, like, how much is he really worth in NIL? Because, like, he was the best player on the team this year, but the team was bad. if he's your best player, like, you need to have a kick-ass supporting cast, which they, you know, obviously didn't have to the level that they needed. So it's like, okay, like, it's terrible. Like, from a perception standpoint, it's terrible. Like, it's absolutely terrible from a perception standpoint. But from, like, a actual, like, winning basketball games perspective, like, I don't know how terrible it truly is.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't know. I mean, obviously it's going to impact the team a little bit, but this isn't like losing some generational. This isn't LeBron going to Miami. You know, like,
no.
It is what it is. He was a great player. We've seen ASU guards transfer in the past and go be that missing piece for national championship winning teams. I guess we've seen that once with Remy Martin. But, you know, who knows? Maybe it's a situation like that and Frankie Collins moves on and he's a very solid contributor, a second or third option where defense is the priority and he plays great defense. Maybe he brings that to a team. But it does suck for ASU. You're losing somebody who's familiar with whatever system Bobby runs. I don't know if any of us could identify what that system is, but –
yeah,
he's familiar with how it works at ASU, and I guess that experience is tough to lose. In terms of production, I don't think it's the end of the world. I'm kind of with you there.
Yeah. Well, and another thing we have to remember with these, like, just good, solid college basketball players is that I think in the back of Frankie's head, and this is could be totally psychoanalyzing it too much, but, like, he probably knows deep down that he's not going to have a long NBA career, if one at all. So you have to cash in as much as you can while you can, you know? And that's, I think that applies to Warren Washington, you know, as well.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Because it's not like Warren Washington might, you know, have some shots in the league or whatever, but I don't think he's going to be, like, he's just not athletic enough, I don't think, to be a consistent NBA center. So it's just, and when you juxtapose it with GCU gaining a lot of national attention over the weekend, beating St. Mary's pretty convincingly and, you know, having all that kind of news cycle, and then you just look at ASU and everything's on fire and it's just like, man, like, oh, and by the way, there's no athletic director yet. And it's been like 4.5 months and it's just, you just add all these things up and it's like, man, like we just, it's just very, there just haven't really been a lot of good news cycle stuff for the, you know, the relevant team sports. I know there's been some good stuff. You know, ASU had a wrestler win a national, an individual national championship and that's awesome. You know,
I think there's a lot of pressure on this football season for ASU fans. It won't be, there's not like a run to the new playoff coming, I don't think, but you want to see a meaningful season. We just had to sit through an exhibition season and then go straight into a basketball season where the team finishes sub 500. And now we're going through a baseball season where the team
is gosh.
10 and 14.
Oh my gosh.
11 and 14, whatever it is.
Their records are, I mean, they got swept by Wazoo. Like,
yeah,
that's.
So we're going through a baseball season. That's also extremely depressing. Hockey gets left out of the tournament because they're not in a conference. We talked about that.
Yeah.
It seems like one thing after another and it's all building toward the next season, which is football, and there's actually some optimism surrounding football, right? After what Kenny Dillingham was able to do in the transfer portal and on the recruiting trail and everything else, it seems like that's what we have to hang our hats on right now, what we're kind of like pushing through all of this to get to. And if that's a letdown, that's going to be brutal. I don't think it will be, I think we're going to be a competitive team. I don't know how many wins that'll translate to. I'm feeling like it might translate to 7 or 8 wins.
That would be
optimistic, but I
dude, if ASU football goes 8-4, that would be outstanding.
I think they're going to be a surprising team. I do think they're going to be a surprising team. I think with the depth that they've added on both lines, the way that they've retooled this roster with the weapons around the quarterbacks, obviously we'll get into Rashada a little bit and what happened with the thumb injury, but that's why you go out and you get Levitt, right? These are two former four-star guys who were supposed to be competing. Now it seems like Levitt has the leg up on the job because Rashad is going to miss spring ball. But either way, we saw the importance of having a backup last year when we got down to our fourth quarterback. So it's not like we've seen the last of Rashada because of the injury. Anyway, producing that depth all across the field, retooling the secondary, retooling every level of the field. You know, I think you put the players in the system for Kenny Dillingham. He's a little more comfortable. He doesn't have to go so gimmicky this year because he actually has the players to run what he wants to run. I do think they're going to be a surprising team. And you take all of that and you go to the Big 12, which isn't the powerhouse that the Pac-12 was last year. I think all of that might translate to more success than maybe we anticipate, especially when you relative to what ASU football did last year and how that season sort of went. But maybe it's all of the letdown speaking. Maybe it's all of my disappointment with all of these other sports. But I do have high hopes for football. And I know that we were going to talk about Rashada's thumb. I got 2 minutes left. Do you want me to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, honestly, yeah, we can talk about Rashada's thumb. Colton has to hop off soon. I'll talk more about basketball and some stuff after. But yeah, kind of give us your thoughts on Rashada's thumb. You mentioned the importance of having Sam Levitt, right?
Yeah, I touched on it a little bit, but obviously missing spring ball is tough. You don't ever want to do that. You want to be able to get up to speed, mesh with some of these new players, all of that. He has been in the system for a year. You know, he is somewhat familiar with what the team is trying to run. It is, you know, he missed all of last season for the most part, right? He played in 2 games. But anyway, that's why you go out and you get a guy like Levitt. I think Dillingham realized depth at every position is crucial, especially when the lines were decimated last year. He's on his fourth quarterback and they're getting run out of games because they don't have the bodies. I think going out and getting a guy like Levitt is extremely important. And I'm excited to see what he can do now, given that opportunity, because you have to figure he has the leg up on this job now, right? Because of Rashada being injured, there's not going to be that competition in spring ball. If he goes through the spring and impresses, what is Rashada going to be able to do to sort of keep him at bay a little bit? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit that he has a leg up. But, I mean, if he balls out in the spring game, then,
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's the leg up that I'm talking about. He's going to be on the field, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be the one playing. If you're not playing, how are you able to show coaches that this is your job? You know what I'm saying? And if you're trying to win games, if you're trying to be competitive, that comfortability and that guy showing you, if he goes out and he plays terribly in the spring, obviously it's a pretty easy decision when Rashad is healthy, right? You know what you have in Levitt. You know that, hey, he's probably not going to be the guy. We need to go back to the guy who played for us last season, is a little more comfortable. He might be a little bit behind because of the recovery for the thumb. But he's also going to give us a little more than what we saw from this guy. That's one thing. Levitt going out and balling out and making the coaches comfortable with what he can do, I don't know why you turn away from that, at least in the early going, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have these two guys. You have these two talented guys. If one of them wins this job to start, I think we saw that with Brady White a little bit when I think it was the Brady White, Manny Wilkins year when Wilkins won the job. And then I feel like we've seen this a ton. And then I think Dylan Sterling Cole played that year too. But we see this all the time where just because one guy takes the job out of camp, you think that's the only guy you're going to see, and then you see three or four other quarterbacks throughout the year, right? That's just kind of been par for the course. So, I mean, obviously it's a bummer when Rashad is behind a little bit, but we can't forget that Levitt was also a four-star recruit, right? And there's a possibility that he goes out and he just snatches this job away. And if he does, I don't know how you say, okay, Rashad was hurt, but we've seen what he can do previously. You have to go with the hot hand in that instance, I think. But I don't I think we're going to see both of them this year, honestly. That's just my gut feeling based on how things have gone for ASU in the past. But, you know, having that depth is so important.
Yeah, totally, totally. And I think it's very important to remind people that Levitt was also a four-star coming out of high school. Yeah. And I don't think most ASU fans, I mean, obviously they didn't, you know, keep any track of his recruitment or anything like that. So, you know, they wouldn't know. But I think that, you know, your average ASU fan thinks that, like, Rashada is way better than Levitt just in terms of, like, talent or whatever.
Yeah.
When it's a lot closer just based on their high school grades, you know.
Definitely. No, I completely agree with you. It's something to recognize as, like, both – it's not a battle between some highly touted guy and then some, you know –
and Trenton Bourget.
Yeah. It's not that. So
– yeah.
I don't know. It sucks, but it's not the end of the world. You know, this is This is kind of what they prepared for when they brought Levitt in too. And I think this is why both guys stayed and both guys wanted to compete. There could be an opportunity for both. So
totally.
We'll see how it plays out. But I do have to hop off, Mark. I'm glad you let me have that word on football before I had to take off. Maybe I'll get the camera fixed up so you can see my incredible weight loss next time.
I cannot wait. I can. I mean, our millions of listeners are just waiting.
They'll have to wait a week. Find out on the next episode.
The ultimate cliffhanger. All right. Yeah, I'll see you, Ben.
All right. Later.
Well, thank you for Colton for joining. Hello, back after Colton left, had some technical difficulties there as he was leaving the call. Good for him to hop on for just a bit. So we were talking about football and Jaden Rashada's injury. And ultimately, I agree with Colton's points of him being, you know, Jaden Rashada being injured isn't that big of a deal because you have Sam Levitt, right? So I'm going to reiterate what Colton said, like getting that depth is so important because, you know, even though it's a non-football injury that Rashada suffered, I mean, football is a physical game, obviously, and injuries happen and all that. So like, you don't want to be in a position where a quarterback who has no business playing or, you know, offensive linemen who aren't ready, whatever it may be, have to end up playing, you know, it's not good. So I think ASU football is in a better spot from that position. I kind of want to shift back to basketball a little bit. Colton wanted to talk about football there. And as he was talking about Rashada, how it wasn't a big deal that he left, I just, even though we did just say that, like, from a production standpoint, I don't know how bad it's going to be that Frankie Collins is leaving, but it's still really bad. It's still really bad perceptually. It's just, anytime the best player on your team just leaves, totally understand why he did. I'm not anti-transfer portal, okay? But it's still bad for the program. It's bad for ASU, and I don't, you know, I think it's like 95% that he's leaving. I just don't see it happening that he's coming back. And I would feel a lot better about going into the Big 12 if you had Frankie Collins coming back in the backcourt and Adam Miller. If you had those two guys coming back, I think that actually really changes the trajectory of this team in the first year of the Big 12. I really do. Because you have the continuity. You have the continuity with them. You, who knows with Sean Phillips? I have no idea. Frankie, I mean, you would have some level of continuity with Kamari Lance, who I've said all year is not as bad as he played this year. And Bryant Celebange as well. And, you know, Bryson Long looks like he's going to return. So you would have some continuity. But, I mean, it's just, it's rough. It's rough seeing him leave. That's the only one of these transfers that really has, like, hit me, you know? I've said about Neil, who I love. Like, Neil is one of the most fun ASU players I've watched. Like, his athleticism is so evident, and I think you could really see him, you know, contributing for another team next year. I totally could see it happening. He's a really good player. And to freshmen, for as bad that is perceptually, ultimately those guys didn't really contribute at all last year. So, and you may have a better chance. I mean, now that Frankie's gone, maybe it's an opportunity to get back Braylon Green, right? Because he has the easier pathway to playing time. Who knows? That's a, you know, small silver lining of this. So, and some of this falls on Hurley too. Like, I've defended Hurley from the sense that he is at a crappy program that doesn't really get any investment, but it is his job to a point to generate more NIL, but specifically NIL investment, him reaching out to boosters, which we've seen Kenny Dillingham do. We've seen other college coaches do. So that part is like, and I know he said on, you know, the radio this year, hey, like, I've been more proactive in, you know, reaching out to boosters for money and all this. And so it's better. Like, I'm sure the NIL, you know, on, you know, March 28th, 2024 is better than it was March 28th, 2023. Like, I'm sure it's better. The question is, how much better? We'll see. If Frankie Collins does return, then there has been meaningful strides made in NIL, I would say. I think that's, I just don't see him returning otherwise. So, you know, we'll see, but it's tough, man. Being an ASU men's basketball fan, Colton was mentioning all the teams that were struggling, you know, football, baseball, men's basketball, women's basketball has been worse than all of them. And so it shouldn't have to take someone with the energy of Kenny Dillingham for a team to be successful at ASU. That's the problem, is there's no, like, none of these coaches have support behind them, it seems. And Dillingham has, like, generated a lot of it. And also, it's a little, with football, it's easier isn't the right word, but I think people are much more willing to, you know, fall in line to support football than they are men's basketball at ASU. Just historically, it's, you know, you can't compare it. But it's still, you know, when you're heading into the Big 12, I don't see how ASU is not the clear last program in the Big 12. I've had this discussion with friends, and I can just go down the list, right? Like, Arizona, no, obviously they're a better program. Colorado, they have had a lot of transfers. They could be in for a very bad year next year, but I trust Tad Boyle. He's done a good job. I think they're in the bottom half for sure. I would still put ASU below Colorado at this point in time. Maybe all time, ASU's a little bit better. I don't, you know, who knows, but I would put Colorado ahead. Utah is ahead. BYU is ahead. Both Kansas schools ahead. Baylor ahead. Houston ahead. Texas Tech ahead. TCU ahead. So that's 10. And then that leaves Iowa State. They're ahead of you. Oklahoma State, TBD. Cincinnati's ahead of you. West Virginia's ahead of you, even though they had a bad year. And so that leaves you with Oklahoma State and Central Florida. I don't know. I think ASU is in a worse spot than both of those programs. That's just me. You know, maybe I'm, you know, being a little bit too reactive as a fan, but And they did make the tournament last year. They did make the 2023 tournament. So you don't have like some crazy long drought that you're dealing with. And like there's at least some memory of being kind of good, but that stuff fades away so quickly. It's tough. It's tough. And, it doesn't seem like Michael Crow cares at all. And I'll get into some of his recent comments at the end of the show because holy Moses, he said. He does not inspire hope. I'll just leave it at that. It's. I think the average fan would say that GCU is officially past ASU men's basketball, and I wouldn't argue with them about it. I wouldn't. Now, if someone were to ask me, had GCU made it to the Sweet 16, then I would have. Been, yep, they're 100% ahead of ASU. They didn't. And maybe it's a little wishy-washy to judge it based on one game, but I think the added value of being talked about this whole week heading into the Sweet 16 would be enormous for GCU, and that would put them ahead of ASU. No questions asked, in my opinion. However, that did not happen. Roll Tide, Alabama won. And the reason why I still think ASU has a slight edge on GCU today, and this could change in a year. I mean, they've closed the gap quickly. Slight edge, because one, GCU has yet to beat ASU. In men's basketball, I do think that is an important note. They have never beaten ASU. And I'm not just going to be like, oh, you won one tournament game, you're officially ahead, And I know they have more, booster backing, of course. So maybe this is just a fraud exercise by my part, But ASU was also in the premier men's basketball conference now. For better or worse, but it's like who's a better job in college football? Is it what's is Mississippi State a better job than thinking of like who's the best? Oh, a better job than Liberty in Conference USA? I don't know, but I think a lot of people would still say Mississippi State just because you're in the SEC. You get more money based on. Your league media deals and stuff like that. But I mean, it's easier to win more games at Liberty. So it is, I think that's kind of the same situation here in terms of men's basketball. But the gap has closed quickly, and I would not blame any ASU fan, GCU fan, whoever, for saying, yeah, GCU is ahead of ASU. I wouldn't blame anyone. I just think there are some key little things that ASU has above. GCU in this moment. And it's frustrating from an ASU fan's perspective that like the gap is closed so quickly because you knew GCU was going to rise no matter what. But it would be also helpful if you just had a competent program. Like if ASU, like no one's arguing that GCU men's basketball is a better program than Colorado right now, right? Or even probably like even Utah or USC men's basketball, like programs that aren't like blue bloods or anything, but they've had good years and that, there's like a sturdy backing of them. And ASU just doesn't seemingly have that at all. I mean, it's a beating a dead horse, but the lack of improvements to the arena is just a obvious shining symbol of how little Michael Crow and the ASU administration cares about it because it hasn't been updated in like 50 years. It was old 20 years ago, right? Like it's just so that kind of stuff is very obvious. And if you walk around like the bowels of the arena, like I'm not so like it's built like it's old. Like it's old. It was old. I remember thinking it was kind of old when I first got there 10 years ago, right? So anyway, Yeah, so I don't know. Hopefully Collins comes back. I don't see it happening. And I guess hopefully these freshmen are good, and hopefully you get some good additions from the portal. From what I've seen, it looks like ASU is mostly going after smaller school guys. So, you know, that could work. Who knows? Like, it's not football. Like, you can definitely have success doing that, but it's still extremely difficult. So yeah, that's enough men's basketball talk, because I don't want to get any more sad about it. So it's not fun. We talked about baseball. I'm going to quick little thing on baseball. I mean, my God, getting swept by Washington State is just, it's terrible. There's no spinning. It's just terrible. And then you lost to Utah Valley last week, and you were down, I think it was like 7-1 to UNLV this past week, and you come back to win. But it's like, man, we're having to come back to win against these teams. Like, we're winning by one run. Just, this was supposed to be like a pretty good season for ASU baseball, and that's kind of what's frustrating, because they took a legitimate step forward in 2023. They should have made the NCAA tournament, and they barely didn't. But, you know, that's at least a step up from where they were before. Now you just, it's just falling back. So that's really frustrating. Some good news. I mentioned the So Richard Figueroa, Sun Devil wrestling, won the NCAA championship for 125-pound weight class. That's incredible. Like, I'm not, I've been critical, but when I'm critical of like the promotion of the non-relevant sport, like the individual sports, it's not because of those sports. It's because people are using those sports to distract the vast majority of the fan base from just the awfulness in the relevant team sports. So when I say like, oh, I like, this doesn't matter as much, it's not because of those individual athletes. It's because, hey, like, the Pac-12 didn't collapse because it had really good wrestling and swimming. Okay. Like, no TV executive thought about that when they were offering deals to the Pac-12 or prying schools out of the league. Like, I've said it before, I ran cross country in high school. I swam in high school a little bit. Like, I get the dedication and the work ethic it takes to do good at these sports, but you can't just be like, oh, we, you know, we did this. But anyway, that's a bad time to bring it up. But, you know, Richard Figueroa, awesome accomplishment. And it's their fourth consecutive top seven finish at NCAAs for ASU wrestling. And awesome. You know, Zeke Jones has done an incredible job. He's done an incredible job as the wrestling coach, similar to Bob Bowman at swimming. And they're doing NCAAs this week. So I'm sure, you know, they'll have a lot of success in that as well. And so I really totally rooting for those sports. And, you know, it's good to, good to have some level of success, you know. So that's good to see. Spring football has started up. I think we've given most of our takes about Jaden Rashada's thumb injury. You know, you would rather have him be part of spring. There's no, you know, doubt about that. But I think it's very important to reiterate that it's very good that we have Sam Levitt. It just is very good. And Dillingham, I think in his pre-spring press conference, mentioned how Sam Levitt kind of brings juice. So, and I think another interesting thing about Levitt is I think he's got some like competitive fire in him. I think, and one of the reasons I think that is because He's from the Portland suburbs in Oregon, and he wasn't really recruited by Jonathan Smith. And that's the reason he left Michigan State, because, you know, Michigan State recruited him. He went there. there for a year. All the Mel Tucker stuff happens. They get rid of him. They hire Jonathan Smith. He pretty much immediately entered the transfer portal, and it was because Smith didn't really prioritize him out of high school. That's kind of the edge you need to be a good quarterback, right? I don't know if I would want someone who's just like, whatever, like I'll go with the flow. Like, I don't know if that's the characteristic you want. I kind of like that he remembers, like, hey, you didn't recruit me out of high school to the level I thought. I don't know, like he probably recruited him a little bit, but to the level he thought he should be recruited. And I remember that, and so now I'm leaving, and I'll go to Kenny Dillingham, who did recruit me more out of high school. And you know, I think it's very important that they have Sam Levitt on this team, and I'm excited to see what he looks like in the spring game at the end of April. I mean, you have a lot of good talent returning, right? Like Colton, like there is reason to have some level of optimism about the football program entering the fall, because you didn't lose, like you lost, obviously you lose Conyers, you lose BJ Green. I think those are the two biggest losses. And then you also lose Jordan Clark to Notre Dame, and then Isai Glass, and then a bunch of backups for the most part. But that's kind of it. You keep Elijah Badger, you keep Scadabo, you keep some of your safeties that were good, you keep some of your young offensive linemen, Sean Na'ah, Bram Walden is coming back, Emmett Boley stays, you know, Ben Coleman, obviously he didn't really play last year due to injury, Kyson Brown, all these guys who, you know, had some, Caleb Black, who contributed a little bit from the receiver position. Getting those guys back is very important. Ed Woods, he's been good at camp. So that's very important. And it gives Dillingham something to build on. He's mentioned that the minimum standard at the program has just risen already. And it's really good to see. It's really good to see because, I mean, no one wants a repeat of last year. And, you know, Cartman, I saw a little quote thing from him on Twitter, how he was saying that the both lines of scrimmage look much better just in terms of depth, and maybe a little bit more just in terms of talent as well. And that is huge. It's huge. And that's kind of the one thing that that just gives you a higher floor, because even before the injuries to definitely to Boley and then to Glass as well, no one was going into the season last year being like, ASU's offensive line, that's the strength of this team. Like, no, not at all. So it's good that that's will likely be less of a catastrophic problem. I'm not saying it won't be a problem, but some of those games, it was a catastrophic problem that gave you no chance to win. So, and I forgot to mention, I mean, Prince Dorba and Clayton Smith returning as well. Though that's huge. I mean, enormous as well, especially with Brian Ward coming back. So, you know, I think ASU football is in a relatively good place. I think it is fair for fans to, I know Colton threw out 7 or 8. I'm more in the 5 to 6 win range. I think 6-6 is a very reasonable thing to get to. The only issue is you did not get dealt a favorable schedule by the schedule gods, because your non-cons are Wyoming, which is a game you should win, but it's losable. Mississippi State at home. I don't know. I mean, you could easily lose that game, even though it's at home. And Mississippi State, who knows how good they're going to be, but it's still an SEC team. It's a Power 5 team. On the road at Texas State on a Thursday. We mentioned that on the last show. That's tough. And then I don't have the schedule in front of me, but you get all the hard teams, right? You get Utah. You have to play them. You have to play Kansas. You have to play Oklahoma State and Kansas State on the road. Territorial Cup is in Tucson. I might be forgetting someone. UCF, that's a tough opponent, but I don't look at really the only game on that schedule I look at like as an impossibility to win is at Kansas State, with hosting Utah being a close second. But you never know how this stuff is going to play out, and the Big 12 is just, we don't know what to expect. Like, I think the expectation is like all these teams are going to kind of be of the same level, and I don't think that's a bad thing for ASU. So, a little bit of football talk there. Oh, one more thing I want to mention. It was very cool to see Josh Doan score his first NHL goal for the Coyotes on Tuesday night at Mullet Arena. And then he scored his second goal in that game as well. It's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. And like, as a Seattle Kraken fan, having Joey Decord on the Kraken kind of emerge as our best goalie this year is awesome. Like, I think I should have mentioned this when Tyler was on, but of all the major team sports at ASU, in terms of winning a national championship, I think ASU men's hockey is in the best spot to potentially, I mean, it's going to be extremely difficult, obviously, but because there's like 16 teams that get into the NCAA tournament, and well, there's just a fewer roadblocks you have to go through before eventually winning it. Hockey is kind of a weird sport where you can just have great goalie play that kind of covers it up, or you just get hot and you have some weird puck bounces, stuff like that. But ASU also establishing, hey, like, we get guys into the NHL. We get guys into the NHL, like, not in the, minor leagues of the NHL, into the actual NHL. That's huge. That's just so huge. And if Decord continues to play well, Josh Doan continues to play well, they have good, I think they have a pretty good recruiting class coming in. And now you're moving to the best college hockey conference, and a lot of these previous issues you had to deal with are in the past. And I think that's going to help them grow as a program. And another thing with hockey, I think like Quinnipiac won the national championship a few years back or something. Like, it's not Minnesota and Michigan and North Dakota and University of Denver winning it every single year. You can have a Cinderella of sorts win it as well. So I think that that's the biggest shining light of a bright spot. It's still, unlikely to happen because it's just extremely difficult, but I think that just the ascension of that program is a really good thing to see, and it also kind of shows what is possible at ASU. Like, I know there's a lot of doomers, understandably so. Okay, I'm not criticizing for anyone for being an ASU sports doomer, because they've given you so many reasons to be that, but I think the hockey program shows, like, hey, like, when you back a program with community support, fandom, having a good location, having a good arena, all this stuff that we talk about, you see the results. And the results are this program is ascending, and they're putting guys into the NHL. And that's a good thing to see. Well, speaking of ASU sports doomerism, I'm going to have to shift back to that now that I'm going to share some quotes and just stuff about Michael Crow that he recently said in an article with the State Press. Sharing the screen now. Boy, they have a lot of Uber Eats ad on these. I mean, I know they got to make money, but man, these are very prominent. First off, before I go any further, I think it's pretty telling that Michael Crow pretty much only does media interviews with the State Press. And I used to work for the State Press. I was a sports editor at the State Press. Like, they do good work, but if you're a 21-year-old college junior, you're not going to be as critical. You're just not going to, there's just no way to expect someone of that age to be super critical of Michael Crow to his face. Like, that's just not going to happen. And so I wish he would, go on like a sports radio show in town or something, or I don't know, have some another journalists interview him and ask him some tougher questions, but I don't know. That's just kind of my theory, but when you get into some of the stuff that he says, I don't know. It kind of explains why. So I'm not going to go into the non-sports stuff. So, okay. Status of the new athletic director and athletic department. It's been over 4 months since Ray Anderson resigned, and the university has yet to sign his replacement. Amid other schools like U of A firing and hiring a new AD within that time frame, I'm so glad they added that sentence. Crow made it clear that the delay in hiring Anderson's successor is more about restructuring the whole athletic department rather than just bringing in a new AD. Okay, here, I'll get the quote. We're done with the historical model of athletics being an auxiliary adjunct enterprise institution where the athletic department has borrowed money from the university in support of our athletes, Crow said. We want ASU athletics to be as much of a part of the university as any other part of the university, that is, operating the way everything else does. We're doing away with the legacy of design that we think is counterproductive to our success. I mean, that's just, I don't know what that means. Maybe I'm just a dumbass. I don't know, but it sounds like a lot of word salad to me. Basically, they're just, maybe it's just realigning where the money is going and stuff like that. I just don't understand why. Wouldn't you want the new athletic director to be a part of that, to be a part of those discussions? Because they're going to be the one who has to run it. So, you know, I don't know. But this is what really stuck out to me. And this isn't a quote so much. It's just a paraphrase, I guess. In the revamping of ASU athletics, Crow described changes to different parts of the department, such as the financial and operational models on which it's built. He said the model would more closely resemble the athletic departments of institutions like Stanford, Vanderbilt, and Northwestern. Dude, what are you doing? What are you doing? ASU does not have the academic requirements of Stanford, Vanderbilt, and Northwestern. It just doesn't. Everyone knows that. Even for as much as good of a job, and I will always say this, for as good of a job as he has done on the academic side, I think it is very okay to be critical of the sports decisions and also understand that he's done a great job overall as a school president. I think it is very logical and reasonable to have both of those opinions just based on the results, right? Like, we just got into the AAU. We are opening a new medical school, right? Like, there's all these tangible good things happening on the athletic, on the academic side. And then the athletic side, you know, we have some good individual sports that are doing well, and hockey is growing, but that's almost like, that's much more about the community. And like, anyway, like, all the main, you know, relevant team sports, not revenue sports, relevant team sports, that includes softball, women's basketball. Okay. This isn't just men's basketball and football. It's those two, baseball, softball, women's basketball, all are underachieving at the moment. But oh, we can just be like Stanford, Vanderbilt, Northwestern. I mean, all of those schools are so great. They have great overall athletic departments. Hey, none of those schools are worth bleep in football, and they're not that great at men's basketball either, right? Like, Northwestern's been good recently. Stanford's had some runs. Vanderbilt had some runs. But those schools are way closer to ASU men's basketball than they are, like, good men's basketball programs, right? Like, so it's just discouraging. It's discouraging to see these three schools being the model that you're going after. I mean, like, Stanford, Vanderbilt, and Northwestern have built-in challenges for recruiting. Because for one, it's just extremely difficult to get into those schools to begin with. And on one hand, it's extremely difficult to be a Division I college football player, right? Like, not everyone has the work ethic, has just the natural athleticism, all this, whatever. It's extremely difficult to be smart enough to get into one of those schools, and also you're good enough to be like a D1 football player at the same time. That's why those schools have very selective recruiting strategies. ASU doesn't have to deal with that. It doesn't have to deal with that. You can get guys from JUCO. You can get guys who barely graduate high school, like whatever. So why are you adding extra roadblocks? Why are you making this more difficult than it needs to be? I don't know. And the only actual reason I can think about it is because we need to reinvent. We're ASU and we're innovative. And we employed the new leadership model 6 years ago. And we do things differently here because I'm Michael Crow and I'm very smart at 95% of my job. And I'm going to use that same mindset for the athletics department, even though I supported Larry Scott for the entire 2010s in the Pac-12 and had zero foresight about the conference's issues and its eventual demise. And that's just, it's not encouraging. So I don't know. Focus on the success of coaches and athletes, not rather than worrying about the long-term financial structure of the football stadium. Okay. What we're doing is we're changing the financial structure of athletics in the university so that when the new athletic director comes in, the old system won't exist anymore. We're about done. And he said the new model is expected to be finished this semester and the new athletic director will be hired, quote, very quickly following the completion of the new model for the department. He doesn't really say anything. Well, actually, he does say something interesting. He just goes out and says women's basketball is a huge revenue loss, which, hey, you know, maybe if you actually like supported the program more, then more people would go to the games and, you shouldn't say that out loud. Like, I think everyone kind of I would say everyone kind of knows that, but women's basketball is like the most, college women's basketball is having like the most popular period of its existence right now. And some of that is just solely due to Caitlin Clark, but it's not just Caitlin Clark, right? It's not just her. And by the way, you've played in the Pac-12 where you've played really good women's basketball programs. Stanford, Oregon State, all, you know, USC. And they have some good women's basketball programs in the Big 12 too. It's just the lack of investment in both basketball programs is so frustrating because like, it's not football. I get that it's not football. But you're joining the Big 12 now, and the Big 12 is never going to be the top football conference. And it is always going to try to be the best basketball conference. And so with that in mind, hey, like, how about we actually try to get basketball, like, off the ground? So, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but when he said the model would more closely resemble the athletic departments of institutions like Stanford, Vanderbilt, and Northwestern, I can't like just gloss over that. I can't just be like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, maybe from like an administrative background, you know, nothing that the fans would see or care or know about. Like, I pray to God that that's what he's referring to. Like, he's saying like, hey, like in terms of how we move money around and stuff like this, and how we do our administrative stuff, it's better to model it off these. Like, I hope that's right. But I mean, it feels like less priority for football and men's basketball than or football and the other, you know, top relevant team sports than there could be. So I don't know. I mean, I just can't really give him the benefit of the doubt on that. That's the thing. Like, I've seen too many decisions made or decisions not made in terms of, you know, hiring athletic director. Washington hired their athletic director replacement in less than a week. And I bet Washington State will do the same. And Washington State is in an even worse position than ASU. Undoubtedly. All the issues that we're talking about, like, I would rather, like, I feel so sorry for Wazoo fans because they're just really going through it, and I don't know what, like, it's bleak. But at least they're like trying to do things. They're trying to be proactive about it. And ASU's sitting here like, what's the rush in hiring an athletic director? Like, why would we do that? Why would we hire an athletic director in a week or 2 weeks when we could wait 5.5 months and wait into April to hire an athletic director? Don't know. I mean, maybe nobody wants the job. I don't really buy that. Like, I just don't. But could be. I mean, I don't know. Like, so that closes out our show. I think, glad Colton brought some optimism there with the football program, and just, yeah, just having Sam Levin on the roster changes the whole calculus after Rashada gets injured. Because it had, like, if they had just kind of brought in like a Paul Tyson-esque backup, or, kind of someone who you knew didn't really have any promise or upward potential, then that would be a lot worse. Or you just stuck with Borgay as the backup, I mean, that would be a lot worse, but that's not the case. So anyway, that'll wrap up this episode. Thank you for watching on YouTube. Thank you for listening on your podcast platform of choice. And as always, go Sun Devils.